curious that you wrote quite a lot on writing and writing about the self. And one of the points in your essay is that an adult or a human being, when he grows up, when he starts using pronouns,
yes,
becomes a sort of character to his own self. There's a sort mm-hmm. of distance which is created between the self and the representation of the self.
Absolutely.
Is it the same thing in literature when you write using a pronoun, when you write an autobiographical novel?
Well, you know, what I'm talking about in the essays is what is sometimes called reflective self-consciousness, right? And that it comes out of the ability in a child, I think, to recognize him or herself in a mirror, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the outside. You're able to see yourself as an other through the eyes of others. Without that, I don't think we would acquire language. And so writing novels or nonfiction or anything is always predicated on reflective self-consciousness of some form or another. Otherwise, we have no representations. We wouldn't be symbolic beings, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Is there a relation between the eye of a character in the novel, a narrator, and the process of memory and the way we represent or reconstruct our memories?
Yeah, this is so interesting and complicated. But in this book, Living, Thinking, Looking, there's an essay called Three Emotional Stories, and I quote myself, I quote an earlier essay in which I wrote, writing fiction is like remembering what never happened, which is a strange thing to say. But what I'm arguing is that the faculty of memory and the faculty of imagination are in fact not so different. I do not mean that writers are dredging up the details of their own lives. That's something very different. Now, that happens. Many writers use aspects of their autobiography or parts of their family life or whatever in novels. So this is clear. The French have a whole genre, autofiction, which is using the self as a character in a novel. But what I mean is something quite different, which is that how does a writer know when a story is right or wrong? Theoretically, fiction has absolutely no boundaries. You can do anything you want. So the boundaries then have to be somewhere else, because I do have a very good idea when my story is right or wrong, when a character has to die, whether I like it or not, for example. And I think this is because the story is resonating at some profound emotional level and not about literal facts or actual events that took place in the past. Mm-hmm. But that's how all writers have to be able to guide a story. Otherwise, you'd be completely lost. The neuroscientist Antonio Damasio has a beautiful little phrase called somatic markers. And these are emotionally coded in the brain. And what happens is that in decision making, we're not just guided by all the possibilities, all the rational possibilities in the future. We're also guided by emotional associations to past experiences. Mm-hmm. So those somatic markers, I think, are also at work in making a work of fiction.
So do you think that when writing a work of fiction, the writing process itself triggers off memories or
Well, they're not
images.
Literal memories,
yes,
but they are, I think, they have some emotional and visual resonance. I mean, last night in the event I did here, I quoted this beautiful thing that Einstein said that I've quoted often. But he was asked by Jacques Hadamard, the mathematician, how do you work? And Einstein responded that his deep working processes had nothing to do with signs, either mathematical or linguistic, that his work was visual, muscular and emotional. I think that's deep. And I think whether you're a physicist or a poet, that is what creativity is. It's underneath. It's that the flowering of those visual, muscular, and emotional realities are different, of course. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what about the process of oblivion? Do you think that it also has some kind of parallel in writing of oblivion, of forgetting?
Oh, yes. Well, forgetting is a really interesting phenomenon, of course, because we know that we forget, but the content of that forgetfulness, in other words, all the amnesia that we've accumulated over the years, that's fascinating. And it's entirely possible that, you know, if you believe in the mechanism of repression, some people do, some people don't. You know, Freud had this idea of censorship. You know, there's a censor standing at the door between the unconscious and the conscious. There are people who are non-Freudians who also believe that there are mechanisms of repression. I have a tendency to be in the repression direction. So that it is, I think, possible in writing fiction that the repressed surfaces without actually knowing much about it, but that there are certain repressed parts of the self that are allowed exit.
A bit like in the dream world.
Yes, and I've often thought that especially writing fiction has a connection to dreaming, that it's a little bit similar to dreaming while awake. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just one last question.
Yes.
Why do you think the genre of the memoir and the autobiographical novel is so popular nowadays?
Well, I think that part of it has to do with a cultural error. And that cultural error is that people have a tendency to fixate more on what they conceive of as real than imaginary. That reality seems to have this deep ground that is more reliable than the imagination. I think that's not true. Our memories are not facts. Our memories are shifting. They're constantly being edited and reconsolidated in our mind brains. So the fantasy of the real story is, I don't think, a very good one.
Do you think a reader can actually make a distinction between a fictitious autobiography, like the ones you had in the 18th century, and an actual memoir?
No, and in fact, it's very. There have been some memoir scandals in the United States that I wrote about in the book. And what's funny about some of them is that, at least in one case, the writer made his life more horrible, more scandalous, more lurid than was in fact the case. And of course, the sources for this, which were in the 18th century, both real and fictional stories, were very lurid and very popular. So this goes on. That's part of what human beings like to consume. I mean, we like that. We like, you know, it's racy, exciting, you know, murder, adultery, sex, you know. It's something that people can't get enough of. And of course, in the form of a text, we're safe. There's a beautiful thing that Ernst Christ, the psychoanalyst, talked about, the aesthetic illusion. I then took that and have talked about the aesthetic barrier. I now have a new phrase, because I think it's better, the aesthetic frame. So the aesthetic frame prevents those lurid, dangerous characters from leaping out of the book and attacking you, but you get to have these exciting emotional experiences without fearing for your own safety. The aesthetic frame.